Hello and welcome to Father Figures, a show about parenting with an emphasis on fatherhood, uncommon fathers, fathers of all stripes. Here is where we explore the joys and griefs, the risks and rewards of being a dad. I'm Stephen Amaya. In this episode, we speak with Andrew Morgan, a friend of the show who has appeared here before. He's the father of a six-year-old girl in what's been a dynamic family in that there have been changes for Andrew in terms of staying at home full-time, working part-time, and working full-time. So let's get right to it, shall we? I asked first where he was from.
So I'm originally from New Jersey, and I have been in Astoria now for about the last decade. I was living down the coast before we moved to Astoria. I was in Tillamook for about 4 years. I have a six-year-old daughter. She's five. She's turning six in like 2 days. When she was born, I was still working full time, teaching at the high school here in town. And I pretty quickly started feeling like it felt intense to be pouring all the energy I needed to pour into my teaching job and then pour all the energy I needed to pour into being a dad. And so pretty quickly, you know, my wife and I realized, okay, something has to give here. It was a really hard decision, but I decided when Simone was about 2.5 or 3, to step away from my teaching position and be able to, you know, spend more time at home raising her. And both my wife and I were working full time at the time. And so, you know, we said, okay, something here has to give. So for about a year and a half or so, I was at home with Simone and then also kind of working part-time, just a couple days a week at a small school. And it was only this last year that I went back to work full-time. And so I'm basically doing academic advising at the community college. And it's been, when you mentioned part-time, full-time working, you know, it's been this constantly kind of moving state of being since my daughter was born. It really has not felt static anywhere in those 6 years. It's just been, so I do feel like we're finally kind of finding a rhythm.
Now she's going to be six.
Yeah.
And what about school for her? Are you?
So she's a kindergartner here at Astor, and so she's loving it. I mean, it's nice because, you know, she's able to be there for most of the day, and then, you know, she does the after school program there, which she's loving.
Okay.
So hours wise, time wise, you know, we're making it work. My wife's able to pick her up at about 4, and, you know, but still, it's anybody with a child knows, you know, we're still in this every day checking on the plan between ourselves, you know, like, okay, so are you picking her up today? Or, okay, you know, so there's still a lot of that.
Yeah, you really have to be engaged.
Yes. we have a paper calendar in our kitchen and we're writing down like, okay, now this is happening at this time.
Yeah, we do that too.
Doctor's appointments here, you know. But it does feel, it feels good that, you know, I feel like we have this kind of sustainable kind of schedule and rhythm now with both of us working full time. And I remember years ago feeling like, oh my goodness, like it felt intense having us both work full time. So Simone's gotten older, you know, my job has changed, but it feels like we're in a different place than we were, you know, 3-4 years ago.
Now with, she's going to public school.
Yeah.
Yes. So as she advances, do you have a sense that you can relax more?
In terms of what?
In terms of not having to be there, because her schedule will be a longer day, I imagine.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I'm hoping, you know, I'll eventually feel that way. You know, and like I said, she's loving Astor, and it's everything about Astor has been positive. I think the dilemma I'm facing now is having been in the school system for so long and seen the high school side of things, yeah, I don't know. It's really hard to not fret about things, or to, you know, to kind of have her experience something, or you know, have her kind of ask about something, and then my mind will immediately go toward, oh, okay, like, you know, where will this lead, or will she struggle with this when she's a teenager? And so I think that having been in the schools, at least at this stage, I don't know, it's not giving me a ton of peace of mind, because I know how complex it is to be a student, you know, at any age.
And to be a high schooler is a far away for her, and things will change.
Yeah.
You know?
So I think that like parental fretting or this like just concern, yeah, I just wish I was like way more chill about it. And obviously, you know, I'm not talking with her in real time about, oh, I'm worried about this, or, but in my mind, you know, as I'm going through the days, it's hard to just feel totally chill about her future, you know. Yeah. And so, I don't know how much or how little of that all dads feel. I assume everybody feels some degree of it, but it does feel...
You like, feel it to a high degree, I think.
I think just like working in education, I really wonder, you know, do all teachers feel this? Do all teaching dads feel this, where you know how hard it can be to be a student, and then as your child... you know, moves through those stages of life, you're almost waiting for the ground to fall out. And yeah, I don't know. I don't like feeling that way. I think in other areas of my life, I'm more willing to, you know, go with the flow and just, you know, see how things shake out. But with this, it's this thing that is definitely on my mind a lot.
Do you feel any kind of, I know I've felt this. Do you feel any kind of animus toward other parents who aren't so, don't pay such attention?
I wouldn't describe it quite that way. I think, and this is another thing that, you know, having been through a lot of parent-teacher conferences, made a lot of phone calls home, I'm under no illusion that, you know, everybody comes to parenting, you know, with the same background or even just the same kind of present scenario to kind of have to move through. So I try, you know, to remind myself, like, this is not something where we all start with the same manual and then people diverge from it. I think if anything, you know, everybody comes to it from this totally different place. And then, you know, we try to find common ground as you know, kids move through the school system and whatever. Yeah. So I think maybe I have more kind of empathy in that department than maybe people who hadn't worked in education. I'm not sure. Yeah. But yeah, I know that in the same way, there's so many different types of students. There's so many different types of parents.
Yeah.
And so what for me maybe feels like a parenting kind of reflex or an instinct in a certain situation, you know, I know that that's just such a subjective thing. So many parents have just different instincts that kick in and reflexes.
Yeah, and a lot of it is financial too. You know, I mean, a vast number of cases have to do with just making money, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you were rich and had an unlimited amount of money, what would you be doing?
Parenting wise?
Yes.
Or just life wise?
Life wise, and well, it's they sort of blend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially when you have a 6-year-old, you have things to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, yeah, for sure. I think the decision to work full time again and to go back, you know, into the workforce full time, you know, a big part of that was financial. And so I think if money was no object, I don't think I would completely not work at my current role. I think I would I would try to work less hours, mm-hmm. but the type of work I'm doing now, I really do enjoy. I feel like it's, you know, supporting students and helping them kind of troubleshoot problems that come up.
Cool.
It's really rewarding. So I do think like, yeah, the full time, the pressure to kind of work full time, you know, it's rooted in, you know, the financial side of things. I think in terms of parenting, you know, money was no object. I don't think I would jump into, you know, private lessons for every possible activity, you know, under the sun. I think I would definitely, kind of more consistently, you know, go on some big trips and travel.
Uh-huh.
But
you would you live in the United States?
I
knew you travel a lot.
Yeah. I would love to, if money was no object, I would love to either, and my wife and I have both lived abroad. I would love to figure out a way to maybe live abroad for a year or two, or if money was no object, you know, try to have a place where, you know, we could spend a month in the summer or, you know, go somewhere. So I think those are the first things that come to mind is I would travel more. Mm-hmm. I would, do kind of more saving for Simone's future.
yeah. See, that's the deal. There's college.
Yeah.
And have you picked out a college yet for her?
No. No. And that, you know, that's kind of something interesting too. Having worked in the high schools, is I'm trying to be really cognizant of, you know, as she gets older, kind of how we navigate those discussions. When I was growing up, I very much remember, not just in my family, but my high school, my circle of friends. You know, I grew up in suburban New Jersey, middle-class area, and it was just assumed that everybody would go on to a four-year school, not even, you know, community college was like less part of the discussion.
Yeah.
And so there really wasn't, you know, any nuanced conversation around what comes after high school. And so I really like that. Since I was in high school, I'm 42 now. Since I was in high school, and in Oregon in particular, there's just a lot more that goes into that decision making, and there's, you know, there's more of a conversation when students are in high school about, hey, there are a lot of different ways to, you know, to kind of pursue a next step after high school. And that could be a trade school. That could be, you could work full time. You could do an apprenticeship. You could go to college. You know, we have Oregon Promise in Oregon. So you get 2 years of free community college if your grades are good in high school. So when Simone gets older, you know, this is going to be a different conversation with her than it was with my folks and, mm-hmm. you know, my peer group and stuff. So,
yeah. Now I've seen Simone grow. I see her, you know, every few months, and I can really see advancement in her, and I'm sure that's a lot is due to parenting. But she's changed, you know. She's really much more mature and much more aware of things, you know, and it's really fun to see.
I try to walk Simone down to school in the mornings with her friend, and many days we get outside the gate and she says, quick, let's run, get away from him. And then she'll just try to run away. So it'll be cool to take her on a bus, but.
Oh, she's going to be fun.
I feel like it's, you know, it's going really fast now. It's kind of has felt fast from the beginning, but it really feels like it's moving quick now with the changes. And
yeah.
I read something the other day. I'm reading The Anxious Generation right now by, I believe it's Jonathan Haidt. And I read this this passage in the book about how there's this, you know, accelerated period of change and growth when, you know, kids are first born and it lasts multiple years. But then there's this period when they're 7, 8, 9, 10, where they kind of, it slows down and there's all of this time, for them to to really learn how to navigate interpersonal connections.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, it speeds up again in puberty, but there's this kind of slowing down.
That slow down window is, well, I'll speak for myself. It's when I had the most fun playing.
Mm, interesting.
You know, if I think back to my childhood, those are the years I look back to because they were so happy and free. And I, you know, balsa wood gliders and kites and, you know, hiding in the field, you know?
and it's funny you bring this up because I had a similar experience where, you know, I don't remember. And some of this is just, it's hard to remember age three, right? Or age four. I don't have a lot of memories from when I was younger than five, but I do remember this really, almost this kind of like outsized, set of memories from age six or so to nine or to 10, where, you know, that was like a relatively kind of small portion of my life, but it had this huge impact on like how I think back to my childhood, who I think I am, what I value. You know, I was outside so much from when I was a seven and eight. And, it struck me recently when I was thinking about this, because I almost had to do kind of a double take and do the math, you know, and be like, wait, there's no way that I remember this and this and this and this. And that was all from age seven and eight. Like, you gotta be kidding me. So I'm looking forward to, as Simone kind of enters that stage.
Yeah.
I'm just curious to see how this kind of plays out. I had so much, it was my first doses of freedom, you know, at those ages.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very much allowed to just be out with a friend and my bike for hours and hours and
you knew where everybody was, all your friends were, because the bikes were in the driveway.
Well, I mean, because where we lived, it backed up to woods and we had access to woods. You know, we frequently were just way, way out in the woods. No one knew where we were, hours and hours and hours, come home completely muddy, you know, and to do that at age seven and chunks of it at age six.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of surreal to think about, okay, she's like kind of
there,
you know, there at that. But then, you know, I'm thinking as a parent, like, am I at peace if she were to come home tomorrow and say, Dad, I want to spend, you know, I want to go over here and do this with this friend and be, you know, off in the woods for multiple hours. It would be startling,
yes.
You know, and I don't like that. You know, I want to be just like, oh yeah, sure. And I know that, you know, I never probably went up to my folks and said, ta-da, I'm going to be gone all day now.
Yeah.
See you later. It was this gradual, you know, kind of adding of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a little, it's,
is it because the times have changed, or is it because, the way you parent, the inside feelings you have?
Well, I do think, you know, I think some of it is, or a big chunk of it, despite how I want to parent, it is tied to how I do actually parent, which is, and I feel like I'm pretty, you know, I'm definitely willing to let her take risks and, you know, learn through trial and error. But I do feel like it feels like it's the norm now to be, you know, concerned and protective, and, you know, to the point of if your child at six or seven says, I want to do this thing, even if it's something I did at six or seven, I feel hesitant to let them do it. I feel as if I have to kind of actively in those moments, like, pause and say, no, actually, yeah, you can do that. You can do that. And my first instinct, though, is, oh, I don't know. And it's been really interesting to think about why am I doing that? Why I'm someone who benefited from all the freedom as a kid.
Yeah.
I feel like as an adult, I'm not overly cautious when it comes to exploring, being outside. I mean, I love, you know, camping and hike the Pacific Crest Trail. You know, yeah. I've done some things where I've taken risks with my own life, being outside and doing these things. And yet I'm just less apt to let her do that. Yeah. I don't know. And I want to be different. It's hard.
You didn't feel protective of yourself as much as you feel protective of your daughter.
Yeah.
You know, that's your job basically. And so,
but I think, you know, it'd be really interesting to ask my parents how they felt when I, at age 7, said, I'm going to be gone all day. I'm going to be, see you later, you know? Yeah. And I get the sense like they were cool with it. And I've since talked to them, you know, about that stage of my life, and they, you know, they just had faith in me. Other parents and the community was also doing it. It just didn't, it felt, like a different time. And
it was.
And they weren't, I don't think they were at all reckless, you know, by letting us do this. And I think that that's really interesting, you know.
Yeah.
I think definitely when I was, you know, much more like when I was at home, there was a period of time where I was not even working the part-time job and I was doing the full-time stay-at-home dad. And that definitely, I noticed it a lot more then. I feel like, you know, it's like a hard balance to try to arrive at where if one person is working, the other one is not. Even though the stay-at-home person is putting in so much work, putting in so much energy, you know, I think so many of us, we've just become conditioned to kind of measure the worth of work, against, you know, what paycheck do we get and what are the benefits? And then when those things are stripped away, you really have to kind of keep reminding yourself, I think, like, wait, no, this is still has like high value.
Yeah.
Like even though society isn't communicating to me that what I'm doing is valuable,
right.
I know it's valuable, or we as a family know that it's valuable. And so I do think that that's a hard, hard thing. And I didn't do it long enough to ever figure out a solution for it or have it fully go away. I think that I experienced some reprieve when I went back to work. And I remember even going back to work halftime, I remember feeling like, you know, oh my gosh, this is like, this feels really liberating on the financial side, even though it wasn't a ton of money. It was just having, you know, that sort of validation of like, okay, I'm driving over here, I'm doing this job, and then I'm receiving these things. And that feels more like what everyone around me is expecting me to do, kind of. So I know we had talked before about, you know, how hard it is, especially for dads, to say to their people in their community, I mean, oftentimes, not all the time, but say to people around them, hey, I'm doing this thing that is maybe less common, right? And I think that is hard enough without any of the financial component of it. And then the financial thing is almost a separate thing, you know, that you have to shoulder. And
it's a ledger, you know, where you can keep track, you know, and as a stay-at-home dad, there is no ledger, you know, it's like growth is measured in what, you know, it's,
Or even just the, you know, I think about, it's common, I think, in so many couples, especially if people are both working in two different places, to at dinner time or at the end of the day, say, how was your day?
Yeah.
And I think that question, you expect the other person to say, like, talk about some work stuff or what, you know, was it a good day work-wise or what?
Yeah.
And now that we're both working full time, you know, usually that's kind of how we answer those questions. But, you know, as a stay-at-home dad, I remember feeling this very, very clearly. If I went out and took someone somewhere, we went for a hike, and we, you know, we just left the house or we did something, you know, that was even remotely fun, there was this kind of this feeling of guilt, right? Where, mm-hmm. How was your day? My wife is telling me, oh, I had this stressful day. I was doing this. And if I'm following that, you know, and I'm the second one to talk, you know, well, was in my mind, I'm thinking, wait, was my day, did I work? I'm putting air quotes up here. Uh-huh. Did I do enough work today, with the parenting, even though some of these activities that are really fun are like, there's parenting there, right? Yeah. It's like, I never found a solution or a happy balance with that. It always felt like, how do I communicate to everybody that, you know, that this is, that there's a ton of value to this, as much value as if I had gone off to a job.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about having more kids?
I think we are going to just have the one. Mm-hmm. We've talked about how, you know, it feels like we are with one child and both of us working full time now, especially, it feels like we're busy. And yeah. I know we could be busier. I know, you know, I know everybody out there with two kids and three kids and four kids is thinking, wait, what? He's not busy. But I do feel like it feels like there's a lot going on. It feels like these moments of these kind of fleeting moments of balance, you know, where at the end of the day, we're like, okay, this feels, today was a good day. And we're, you know, we're eating at a reasonable time. And, I feel like I want to try to hold on to those and as many as we can. I think that's, for me, that's kind of the big appeal.
All right. Well, Andrew Morgan, thank you for coming on Father Figures once again. It's been a pleasure having you as a guest.
Thanks for having me. It's great being here.
Well, that was a bit of a potpourri from a busy and articulate father. It feels like his daughter's in good hands. We look forward to watching her grow. I want to thank Jason Shaw of Audionautics.com for today's music. And you can always get in touch with me at RadioRanchero@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and please remember the days may be long, but the years are short.
How do I communicate to everybody that, you know, that this is, that there's a ton of value to this, as much value as if I had gone off to a job. I think the dilemma I'm facing now is having been in the school system for so long and seen the high school side of things. I don't know. It's really hard to not fret about things.